My name is Michael Bailey, and you're listening to the EDP Formula One podcast. Hello there, welcome to the EDP F1 podcast. My name is Michael Bailey. Alongside me, I have a dynamic duo, but not like Batman and Robin, more like... No. What, Ped, do you want to suggest a name for yourself?
Pie and Mash.
Pie and Mash.
Ooh, that's...
Yeah, Pie and Mash.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's a good combination that you're always down for.
Okay.
It keeps you warm on the lonely nights.
I have with me Pie and Mash, Harry Hamilton and Kyle Cumbers.
Hello there.
Hello. Sorry, rather sporadic opening to the podcast, but we got there in the end because we've opened it.
We have.
I think that's good enough, isn't it, really? Yeah. We are here to talk about the Japanese Grand Prix at Suzuka. Last year, Sebastian Vettel won the Drivers' Championship at Suzuka. This year, he may well have taken a huge step towards repeating the feat and making it three titles in 3 years. The big talking point, Fernando Alonso knocked off the track and out of the race with a puncture on the first corner. Sebastian Vettel, who was quick, very quick, ominously quick all weekend, sails to victory. He is now just 4 points behind the Spaniard in the Drivers' Championship with 5 races to go. Ped, how important a win in terms of momentum and the championship was that for Seb?
Oh, it's huge. You can't downplay it. I mean, the gap between them now is nothing. I mean, he's 4 points. I mean, you can cough 4 points in this now that they've upped the points that you get when you win a race. It really is pittance. What it basically means is that even if, I mean, Alonso comes in higher up, Alonso comes in first, gets his 25, Seb can come in, you know, second, he's still clinging on. He's still within a podium finish of taking the lead. The momentum is the most important thing there, though, is what you mentioned, Michael. Red Bull, you said they were quick. They were, I mean, excuse the pun, they were banzai quick out there. They were incredibly fast, and Seb did what Seb does, which is hit that first corner, stay in front, and... I mean, he didn't even scamper away. He fled. I mean, he was driving it like he stole it, and it was just out of sight from him. Going forward, you've got Korea. Yeah, there's a good few straights, as Kyle and I were examining the track earlier. But you've also got some very quick corners and a very twisty section. Most of the sectors there are very, very twisty. And we all know Red Bull tends to do very well when it's got to use its grip and go around corners. It's not so dominant on the high-speed straights. I think the power of the Red Bull is going to be enough getting around Correa to really reel those Ferraris in. So this is huge. This weekend was massive for them.
There's been a bit of a focus on suggesting that Red Bull would be stronger at these final tracks. They do seem to suit them, and they have done in the past. What I love about this is that, maybe people who aren't into Formula One think that because of the mechanics and the engineering that is the cars do the talking, and the sporting element maybe isn't quite as unpredictable as you'd get in other sports. But this is proof, isn't it, that Red Bull can have developed and are driven to change their form and to push something that looked like it was almost inevitable a few months ago.
Yeah, I think I said Red Bull, well, the Suzuka track was the Red Bull track, really. It suits them perfectly, but you have to be a bit careful. I mean, a couple of races ago, it looked like McLaren were going to run away with the championship, and they had all the momentum. And now it looks like Red Bull have, and especially Vettel. I mean, Webber was obviously unlucky again. But, I think, I said at the moment, Vettel is favourite, but we have to be a bit careful that it could all change around this weekend, and it could be Ferrari with a win, or, momentum could change. So.
Well, I mean, Alonso's due, and we know from Alonso that even when he's had a shoddy car to drive in the years past since driving for Ferrari when they haven't lived up to the hype, when his back's against the wall and he needs to pull it out, that's when he's most dangerous. Because there's no doubt in this room about the genius of Fernando Alonso's driving. I mean, it does deserve the G word there, I feel. And when he feels the pressure, and now, it wouldn't surprise me if Luca de Montezemolo was on a plane himself and just saying, look, Fernando, 4 points now, it's a little too tight when you pull something out of the bag. And, we're going to see some magic from him as well, I think.
I think even on Sunday, Ferrari proved they had a quick car. I mean, Massa was quick, so it would have been interesting to see what Alonso did in the race. Apart from, we'll debate it later.
Aside from end up facing the wrong way.
Whose fault it was. But, it would have been interesting to see Alonso.
Do we now concede that it is a two-horse race for the championship?
Not yet.
Kyle's not even sure about that. Really?
Yet. I think we could still have a twist that brings in either Raikkonen. But could bring in Hamilton.
Yeah.
But maybe that's me hoping. A couple of weeks ago, Alonso looked like wrapped up, and now a couple of races, it's all changed. But
I think if it's going to be anyone, it's going to be Hamilton, because he has the point to prove really here now, doesn't he? He's going to. I mean, is it? Do you think it's something that would be on? I mean, flip it now and ask the question to you, Michael. Do you think it's? Do you think it's something that's going to be on Hamilton's mind to take that number one car to Mercedes? You know, to actually win the championship to McLaren and basically walk off saying, you didn't want to keep me enough.
I don't think it's in my contract to be asked questions, to be honest. I cannot see how Lewis Hamilton leaving McLaren has any positive impact on him trying to win the driver's title.
I completely agree.
I think subconsciously, deep down, that I think just projects an air of, I'm not... full commitment in what happens this year. And not consciously. Everyone will be striving for it. But when you're talking about the top level of performance, where you know you shave off a little bit and it has a major effect, if McLaren could have played it into Lewis's hands, maybe at Suzuka. I know that Lewis was a long way behind, but and maybe Jensen had a chance for the podium. Yeah. But if they were serious about Lewis really going for the title with those 2 points of every little helps. I don't know, maybe it wasn't the practical situation, but I would imagine no one was really thinking about that, and I think the fact that Lewis is leaving at the end of the year makes that a possible, makes it a palpable, a plausible.
I mean, that's the thing. You're not gonna. I mean, in theory, they probably could. And if any McLaren engineers out there listening want to correct me, please feel free, give us a shout. But are you really going to spend 3 sleepless nights after a race trying to figure out where every single thousandth of a second went if you know the guy's just going to up and leave? Or are you going to start thinking, oh, what kind of car does this Perez guy drive? What can I do to make him really quick next year?
It's a difficult one because you can't undermine or question McLaren's integrity. Clearly, they are going to want to give that guy as much as they can at every race. And It's very difficult. I think it's something that comes up in hindsight. I don't think it's something that's tangible in the heat of the moment, but I think it's something where you look back and you look now and you think, I just can't help his quest.
Yeah, I think for McLaren now, the most important thing probably is constructors. I think it's the way they manage Hamilton now. I think they have to sort of say, oh yeah, we're still pushing behind you, but back of their mind, they're thinking, well, we've got to push him, but for the constructors, which is still a possibility for them. Mm-hmm. I think that's where they got to sort of play it, really, and worry about the constructors and motivate Hamilton by saying, yeah, we're still going for the drivers.
I mean, but, a McLaren 1-2 and Red Bull low down in the points, which isn't unreasonable, and they're straight back in this.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. Shall we? We'll come back to McLaren in a bit. I'm sure we will. The other star performer, maybe the star performer, given the way Sebastian Vettel and Felipe Massa reacted to him on the podium at Suzuka, Kamui Kobayashi. A Sauber finishing on the podium, third. Kamui's first podium at his home race. What a star.
It's home field advantage at the end of the day, isn't it? I mean, it really does have a certain power to it. And I mean, they were saying all on the coverage all weekend long, he was the busiest man in Japan that weekend. He was everywhere. I felt so sorry for him because he did an interview where he said he went downstairs to get his breakfast. There were so many people wanting to talk to him. He talked to them. By the time he'd finished talking to them, he had to go back upstairs and have a shower. He didn't have his breakfast. I thought, come on, you've got to make time for breakfast if you're going to go and race for a couple of hours. But that's the kind of man that he... Because you see, he's not only a fantastic racer, and he has matured. We've seen that over the last 3 years. When he first got into that Sauber, he had a bit of a reputation as a bit... I wouldn't hesitate to use this word if it was anyone else, but a bit kamikaze at times. Now, I would say that if it was any nationality driver, but he was very much, he would throw it up the inside. Half the time, he'd come off looking like an absolute genius. The other half, he'd maybe lose control, put a tyre out and maybe spin off. But he was never one of these guys that was getting a reputation as responsible for taking other drivers out of the race. He always seemed to race clean but bold. And now that he got that under control and he is better at sort of meeting that out, he really is becoming a spectacular driver to watch. Again, there are the inconsistencies, and that, I mean, that's down to Sauber. That's what separates Sauber from the top flight teams, is the consistency issue. But when, and Sauber have proven time and again this season that when that car is fast, it's ridiculously fast. And it's, you know, I mean, would, again, as Carl says, it'd be interesting to see what would have happened if Perez hadn't decided to go around the outside and just lose control of his car, which was completely inexplicable. But to see that car on the podium, and especially at that chap's home race, I mean, his first ever podium, you could see the emotion was there. And the crowd were phenomenal.
The crowd was incredible. The way they were chanting his name before he went on the podium, I think it was a bit of spine tingling going on there, I think.
Yeah, it was good for Japan, because I think it's only the third podium in the history of all Japanese drivers, so it's happened at the home race as well.
Absolutely.
Which is spectacular for them. But just hope he can push on, and I don't know if it's a combination of being under pressure for his drive and the home crowd maybe contributing towards it. But I think, I've seen in the past, he has proven to be quick enough, and just hope he can consistently get up top and push for them podiums.
Because that was a surprising thing for me, that openly they were talking about the fact that it's a serious possibility he won't have a drive next year.
Yeah, I think, they're sort of talking that Sauber weren't happy with him, which I thought was a bit harsh. But I think that definitely helps getting a third position. and Perez leaving it, that may keep his seat. But I do hope he stays in Formula 1, because he's good entertainment. And his podium interview was talking in Japanese, and it looked like a man who's really pleased to be on the podium, which sometimes you don't see.
He's the kind of guy you get the feeling from him that he really enjoys racing and everything about racing. You know, being on the track, in this case being on the podium, talking to the people about it, getting involved in the engineering. He just seems to really be happy to be where he is. And it's, you know, it's nice when you see people that enjoy their work. I mean, I assume Kimi Raikkonen enjoys his work, but you'd never know it from the interview.
You have to assume,
because he gives you absolutely nothing. But Kamui Kobayashi seems to be a very open kind of guy. And as I say, I agree with you entirely, Kyle. It would be an absolute shame if he wasn't in Formula 1 next year. But I personally think his driving resume has shown him enough that even if Sauber don't have him next year, I think a team somewhere down the line would be foolish if they let him slip through the cracks.
Okay, you know what time it is. It is time for the EDP F1 Pit Stops. Diddly-doo. there you go. There's a little jingle for you there.
Excellent.
Special one for you. Lewis Hamilton and his tweets. Now, just to praise it briefly, Lewis Hamilton, after the race on Sunday, tweeted that Jenson Button has now unfollowed him on Twitter, and it was a real shame. They'd been teammates for 3 years. Lewis thought he had more respect for him than that. Only to 2 tweets later go, "Oh, I just realised Jenson never followed me in the first place." Brilliant.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Great.
Unfortunately,
I love it.
Unfortunately, the world of celebrity and pop culture is riddled in the past with incidents of people saying stupid things and putting their foot in their mouth. However, in the social media age, the moment you say something stupid and put your foot in your mouth, the whole world knows it. Now, before, it could have been something that could have been dealt with in-house, maybe a leak to the paper in 6 months' time, and then you go, "Ah, no, it's all right, we're all good. Now, look, here's a photo of us holding hands and we're all best friends." Now, there is no filter on the brain mouth in sports. And I'm not talking about just Formula One. I'm talking about all sports. I mean, Lewis is prolific with his tweeting. We know that.
He is now, yeah.
But I just get the feeling this guy does not think when he's tweeting these things out. And he writes it and he presses send. And you just, as soon as you say something stupid, the world is on you. And it's utterly ridiculous on his part.
Yeah.
Why don't we hear from the mediator of this event? Those of you who are close Twitter followers, Kyle. Kyle weighed in on this.
Yeah, you
on
did.
Twitter.
You did. Told him, didn't you, Kyle?
I told him he was a silly boy. Yeah. And he shouldn't be doing this on Twitter.
I reckon he listened.
Yes, I'm sure he did. But then, I mean, he's a stupid. Why is he even bothered that someone's following him?
That's exactly.
But sort of looking at the other side, I suppose he's. He's probably got loads of tweets saying, "Oh, Jenson unfollowed you when you signed for Mercedes and all this." And I suppose he's just being very honest. And if he felt that at the time, then can you blame a man for being honest?
That's a fair point. I hadn't thought about others flagging it up, because he has got over a million followers. Yeah, I mean, I don't even know how you would... Well, obviously it says who's following you, but if it's got, a lot of people.
He turned on his phone and got thousands of messages saying... And he's just responding to his fans, I suppose, is an argument, but there is a better way of doing it.
But I suppose you could always say that actually what we've missed here is that there could have been far more fallout, because what's worse, thinking that someone you've been a teammate of for 3 years and had more respect for you has unfollowed you on Twitter, or the fact that this guy who's your teammate and has respected you never followed you at all? I mean, what is worse than that in that situation? What do you go for? The bottom line is, keep it to yourself, mate, or talk to the man face to face. He's only in the garage next door. Right, just wander around. Hey, Jensen, great race. By the way, mate, slight Twitter issue. What's the problem with that? You never follow. Okay, fine, done, dusted. The world does not need to know this. It's petty and foolish.
I think the real question is, does Lewis follow Jensen? You know, that's, I want to know. Yeah. I want to know.
He probably unfollowed him and then refollowed him ever so quickly.
Oh, good grief! Sauber seats. We touched on this with Kamui. Obviously. I've got to get my brain around this now. Yeah, Sergio Perez will be going to McLaren for next season. Kamui Kobayashi may not be at Sauber next year. Who the hell's going to drive for Sauber next year? Two open seats.
Adrian Sutil.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Adrian Sutil will be one. There's always the little word out there of our Polish friend who severed his hand. He may be coming back.
Robert Kubica is in... has rallied now, hasn't he? It's an incredible recovery from the injuries.
As it stands at this point in time, I'm under the understanding that his reflexes in his hands are not quick enough to drive the gears on a Formula One car. But the rehab that's available to these athletes is incredible. The surgery and the consultation that's available to these athletes is astounding in this day and age. And if he really wanted to, and I think he was a tremendous driver in his time, and if he really wanted to, I think that Kubica could put his... put his foot down on his rehab and really make it back next year. But Adrian Sutil's a serious name to consider next year, because he is available. He's going to be wanting to get back into Formula 1. He's a proven commodity for a middle-of-the-field team. Now, what you have to then consider is, are Sauber happy being where they are, or do they really make a real serious push for the top spot? And that's what they have to decide.
I like that call. I like that. That's a good call. It won't be Michael Schumacher. He has definitely retired, having been dumped by Mercedes. I have a feeling Felipe Massa will still be at Ferrari next year, the way he's driving and his little smile on his face.
Yes, he seemed very confident the weekend.
That's a complete turnaround on the podcast, isn't it? Because I think
we were all unanimous
that it was Massa's time.
Between that and Alonso's title, we've not done that well, have we, really, to be honest. Great drive by Felipe on Sunday, has to be said as well. Well done, you. Heikki Kovalainen, and I think he could well end up being a Sauber driver next year, and I'd quite like to see that. Think he could lead that team really well.
I mean, he deserves a drive at Sauber. I think it was Sauber. I think they may, with Perez leaving, may need money coming in. I don't know if Gutierrez could bring in the Mexican money that they'd be missing with Perez.
Who's, of course, a GP2 driver.
He doesn't.
With Lotus.
Yes. Maybe. In my opinion, doesn't deserve it, but I think he could bring in the money. And he's
never underestimate the politics of it, Carl.
Yes, and he's a reserve driver as well at the moment at Sauber. So, I mean, it could be. Like Sutil, like say Kovalainen, could be a good combination with a young driver coming through.
But it will probably need resent the term pay driver, but someone who's going to bring some money with them because of what Perez will be taking out.
Yeah,
I do have to jump in and say, of course, just in honour of our erstwhile yet not here colleague David Tillier, he'll probably say Charles Peake.
Well, why not?
Because
has he got the French buck behind him?
I honestly don't know.
David will know.
David will know. Him and Charles.
Hold on 7 days.
Bezzy mates.
Post-career, we'll have a delve into that one. We should also mention Romain Grosjean, a man almost left in tears, it has to be said, when he was interviewed after the race. His first lap woes aren't particularly going away. He was trying to be so careful that the guy next to him, he didn't collide with him, that he didn't look in front of him and drifted into the back of Mark Webber, thus branding Grosjean a first lap nutcase, which I shouldn't laugh probably while re-quoting that. Do we feel sorry for him?
Personally,
because there's a lot of ganging up going.
We didn't feel sorry for Pastor Maldonado when everyone ganged up on him, and all just because Roman does it with a better smile on his face does not mean that he's not actually now becoming a bit of a threat on the track. You have to say that, I'm sorry, I was concentrating on the guy next to me and I didn't see the guy in front of me, You're one of the top 24 drivers in the world. That's why you sit in that car. That's why you're on that track. That's why you get paid that money. I'm sorry, it's not acceptable. The record that he has of DNFs and first lap crashes is absolutely shocking. I would not be surprised if he was getting another talking to from the FIA. I'm not necessarily going to say that a ban will be handed down again, because it wasn't what you would consider a dangerous collision, or one that caught anything that caused anything particularly dangerous. But he's got to get it sorted. I don't see him being dropped from the team next year. He will still be at Lotus, but he will have to really, really work on his game, because to say, oh, I'm sorry, I was concentrating on something else, I mean, that's just not acceptable at this level of motorsport.
He looked a bit of a broken man when he was being interviewed afterwards, and that is probably a worry, isn't it? Because this is going to, if it wasn't playing on his mind a lot before, this sort of thing could cripple him.
Yeah, I mean, especially back-to-back races as well. So he's literally gone from constant media pressure all week, and this weekend he's going to be interviewed, and what have you done different for this weekend, and the first lap. Everybody's going to be watching him, and I do feel sorry for him, because, as you said, he looked like he was nearly in tears. I mean, it can't be fun being asked the same question by every nationality of media, but I think it's maybe a bit extreme, but it's going to be saving his career, because this, like I said, it could ruin his career, and he could, and if he has another incident this rest of the season, all winter he's got to think about it, and yeah, it could ruin his career, which would be a shame, because he is quick.
Something to keep an eye on in the off-season will be who, if anyone, new Lotus bring in as their reserve driver next year, because if their reserve driver looks to be a capable driver, expect Romain Grosjean to be on a very short leash. One or two crashes, they will yank him, because he needs to start performing. Now, if he finishes the season strong, and he starts the season strong, then great, that's fine. But have a look and see who they bring in as their reserve driver, because if it's someone more than capable, or someone that you think could really develop or have a chance, then chances are they are looking to keep him on a very short leash.
Yeah, if it's Jules Bianchi, then we better be careful. Then poor old Roman better be careful. Okay, then, I know you guys are all missing David Tillier. He's not here this week and could make it last week, but he has been in touch with me, so just to give us some of his thoughts. He says, not sure what to say, and then goes on to say it. A very 2011-esque drive from Vettel, and I feel it is his championship to lose now. Alonso needs a good result to keep his grip on the championship, but the Red Bull looks too fast. Driver of the day for him was Kamui Kobayashi. Not giving him any points for that, are we?
No.
He reckons Seb Vettel will win in Korea. And don't get me started on the Hamilton to Mercedes story. It's a bad move. Not really, I'm sitting on the fence there, David. Good to hear. And we'll hopefully have David in on the next podcast, all being well. He did include a little line on Grosjean, Romain Grosjean as well. Have to agree with the pundits. It's happening far too regularly to be a coincidence. He needs to improve before the end of the season.
But how does he improve is a good question. I mean, how do you... Because he must be so tense going into the first corner. Can you train on... You can't train. It's just instinct, isn't it? The first corner.
But it was interesting. Eric Boullier, team principal at Lotus, kind of got asked it after the race and touched upon the fact that they tried to almost take some of the things off him in the first lap procedure and tried to narrow his focus down. Of course, that he probably then did that too specifically and took his eye off the ball ahead. But head up, Roman. Career.
I'm just worried about what's going to happen in Brazil with him, because, you know, they've got some exotic birds, and if one of those colourful things flies across the track, he may take his eye and look at that and go, oh, look, birdie, and then bang.
It's all over.
He's in the back of someone. I mean, we shouldn't joke about it because it's dangerous, but he needs to sort it out, and it needs to be sorted out soon.
Right then, shall we have a highlight of Suzuka?
I'm going to go a little bit cheeky here.
We like cheeky, that's fine.
My highlight of Suzuka, we mentioned it earlier, was... The Kobayashi fans chanting his name before he went out onto the podium. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a third place driver lauded more than the winner of that race. And it was, as you said, spine tingling. It was goosebumps. It really was, and it was because of the way that the race ended. I mean, it was an all right race. It didn't set the world on fire. You know, it was okay. But because of that race and the way that it ended, the enthusiasm from those fans. And let's be honest. Japanese fans of Formula 1 have always been enthusiastic even before they had a champion. And, you know, even when there have been no Japanese drivers on the grid, these guys have still been enthusiastic about racing. That's amazing. That's fantastic. Kamui coming out onto the podium for me was a definite highlight of the race, even though it technically happened after.
That's
the
fine.
Race.
Well,
for
that's,
me,
that's,
that was my highlight.
That's fine, Ped. No worries.
My highlight would probably be Perez spinning out. I thought it was quite comical.
That's his low light.
I think it'd be even more interesting if he did crash into the back of Hamilton, because I think the interviews of Mark Whitmarsh would have been good television. I think that was my highlight. Was quite funny. The spinning, trying to overtake a McLaren who was going to join.
I was going to say that battle, because Perez's overtake on Hamilton at the earlier in the race was fantastic. And then, as the follow up for that, the one you're talking about, where he couldn't do it twice and he probably got a bit carried away. And I think Lewis maybe just had a little smile in his helmet at that one. Also, the smile on the face of Felipe Massa when he was being interviewed after the race. I think having spent 2 years saying how it wasn't an issue that he had to lead on the podium, he then was able to finally admit that it completely was, which is the way it works when you're interviewing sports stars. I can relate to that. Okay, and a driver and team of the weekend. You can go for the obvious, it's fine. Who do you want?
My obvious is actually, I'm going to give it to Massa for driver of the week. Although Kamui did a fantastic drive, got on the podium for the first time, Massa came from way down the grid for that second place. He was where was he on the grid? He was He was 10th on the grid. I mean, you know, Kamui started third. He finished third. He didn't gain any places. He just held where he was. Massa started 10th on the grid. Fantastic drive in a fantastic car. Real calm, real composure. He showed everything that a Ferrari driver should be. And he showed everything that he used to be back before the spring incident, before 2009, when he was a championship contender, a legitimate championship contender. And, I mean, I'm not saying he's that now, and this may have just been a one-off, but that is what he looked like in the race. And so my driver of the weekend goes to Massa.
Fantastic. Kyle?
We're going to go Kobayashi. I think just above Massa, because I think he qualified well as well, so I think the whole package over the weekend done well. An outsider, I thought Daniel Ricciardo had a very good race, finishing 10th and getting a point, and keeping Schumacher at bay.
Yeah, holding off Schumacher as well.
I thought it was a good result for Toro Rosso and for him.
He did do very well. I'd have to give it to Kamui, although I don't think you can ignore Sebastian's domination. Team, nice and quickly.
I'll give it to Sauber, because they obviously put a lot behind Kamui and they actually managed to make a car that could finish the race. It was driver error that forced Perez out. So Sauber for me, team of the weekend, top finish for them. Great to see them on the podium again.
And a cracking pit stop when really under pressure as well.
Yeah, Sauber very good. Very good, and unfortunately again I think they could have got two good results.
Yeah,
seems to be this year they'll have one good result and never driver makes a mistake. But I think my probably Red Bull I'll go for, because I think the car was such an improvement, and with 20 seconds ahead Patel was looking good for the rest of the season. For Red Bull,
it will be very interesting to see how they perform over the next couple of races, whether they can keep this stuff up. I'm going to mention our EDP Prediction League, because I have sort of kept it up to date now, working. We had a great weekend. Perry, you predicted that Sebastian Vettel would get the fastest lap.
Yeah, and he did.
Boom! Yep. I suggested that Sauber would be on the podium. Boom! Kyle, you suggested Fernando Alonso wouldn't finish, to which I think I laughed. Boom! You got it right. Amazing stuff. So, Kyle, you are officially number one in our Prediction League. Out on your own. We can't afford prizes. But you have a 53% success rate, average technical point scoring result.
Not bad.
Ish. There's probably an acronym for that, but I don't know what it is. So, Korea coming up. No one in Korea really cares. The rest of the world sort of does. What do you reckon?
Predictions. Red Bull looks strong. I think McLaren will bounce back. I think Alonso will bounce back. So I'm going to go Alonso win. Come back and win. Patel pole. And a sort of an outside random prediction.
He's loving it. Look at him. He's laughing at it.
I can't think.
Pressure.
Yeah. Can we come back to him?
Sorry. Come back to him. It's a tactic, this.
Yes.
I'm just going to go complete Red Bull dominance. Seb Vettel's going to get pole. Seb Vettel's going to scamper away into the sunset. He's going to win that race. Fernando Alonso is going to come second, and I'm going to say Sergio Perez is going to come third. He's going to want to prove that was a fluke, that he went out. He's going to want to show that he can do the driving, and that I think the Sauber's going to come on strong. So that's my top three. That's what I say is going to happen. I say Vettel, I say Alonso's going to come second, and then it's going to be Perez. And my crazy outside prediction is, because just I like saying it, I'm going to go and say that Caterham will score a point.
Caterham will score a point.
I have faith. I have faith in Caterham. That they might be doing something good, maybe, and that someone may crash out. I don't know. Does it rain a lot in Korea?
Well, it almost was a complete washout a couple of years ago, wasn't it?
So, you know, we never know. We never know. Caterham in the points. Heikki knows he's driving for a good... he's going to be driving for a good drive next year, so Caterham in the points.
I think Jenson Button will finish second. There you go. I think that's nailed on. And I would assume one of Vettel and Alonso will finish ahead of him.
Which one?
I don't know which one.
Well, you have to... come on. I've got you sitting on the fence. Kyle hasn't even given us an outside edge prediction.
My prediction is that Jenson Button will finish second.
All right.
And one of those two will finish ahead of him. I'm not sure which. I think one of them might not finish. Red Bull have gone back.
You can't say Alonso two DNFs in a row. He will be a petulant child. Those giant sunglasses will get thrown firmly out of the pram.
Well, the Red Bull have gone back to the old alternator pre-Valencia, apparently. So that's ironed out some of their issues there. So I should probably go for another one, something like Paul de Resta finishing in the top seven.
Oh, that's a good shout. Good shout.
Black.
I'm going to go my outsider. Well, I don't know if it's an outsider, but I'm going to go Grosjean's going to have a good weekend.
Nope.
He's going to bounce back and he's going to get podium.
Podium for Grosjean?
Love it.
Wow.
He's going to bounce back.
To be honest, you could have said survives the first lap and we probably would have.
I thought it would be obvious.
Very big shout.
Brilliant.
So
well,
wide corner.
There you go.
Yeah. Grosjean podium.
If expect all those things to happen, although or, they obviously or, aren't, can't all happen.
Or not.
The crystal balls. All right, then. I think we shall wrap it up then, shall we? Because Korea is literally now, pretty much. Yeah. It's happening this weekend. So we will be back after Korea. Give it a day or two for all the analysis. Don't forget edp24.co.uk/F1 for Formula One news on Lotus and Caterham. A link to this podcast. And you can get in touch with us, quiz us, tell us off for our predictions and our silly comments. I am at Michael J. Bailey. Kyle.
I'm at K. Cumbers.
Ped.
I'm at PedHD56 and I do not follow Michael Bailey.
I can't believe this. I thought we were teammates. I thought.
Well, you never followed me.
Fair point. On that note. On a sad note.
On a sad Twitter public note. Argument note.
You could have told me off air.
It's all in the surname.
All right, we'll sort this out in a minute. Bye for now.